Good morning.
Good morning.
It's so lovely to be back in London and to have such a beautiful silence this morning to pave the way for our talks today. This year, my work has been on looking at spiritual living as an art. We studied the art of spiritual healing in the beginning of the year, and the second half of the year I'm working with the art of meditation. And this idea came to teach spiritual work as I would teach an art class. If you're an artist, the purpose that to go to an art class is to develop your skills as an artist. You already know you're an artist. You have that desire, that inclination. You have some means of talent that you want to express. By the fact that we all are here and studying this message, we all want to develop the art of spiritual living. And what differentiates an artist from someone who is not an artist, but it is their perception. It's how they see the world. You've heard the statement, you know, that person has an artistic eye, or they have a musical ear. They hear things that we don't hear if we haven't developed that facet of our being. The visual artist sees things that we might not see, and when they take a photograph or they put it down in a painting, we have a little different perspective than on something that maybe we see every day. The writer has a certain degree of detachment to look at the human situation and find the humor in it or the drama in it or expose some of the foibles of the human condition so that it brings it to our attention, and suddenly we look at life and we look at ourselves and our behavior and our habits and we think, oh, I fall right into that. And so it mustn't be unique to me, it must be universal. This idea that we all have a spiritual nature that is artistic is part and parcel of who we are. If we have not discovered that spiritual nature or had any inclination to study or to find out about the spiritual nature, we would still be living from the human perspective and following the human laws and being very satisfied with that. But there is a point when material satisfaction is not satisfying. Material things do not bring meaning to life. They do not give us that deep sense of living that the spiritual nature does. And however we have come to this spiritual path, we are dedicated enough to want to pursue it. Hence we are together in this class. So every art class begins with principles. Doesn't matter if you're learning visual arts or music or writing, there's basic principles that we all follow. And every art, even if those principles, when an artist comes into their full expression, are bent or skewed into, you know, our perception of art, they still follow certain basic rules. As a painter, you have to know the combination of colors. You know, you have to know how to mix color, or you're not going to be able to put color down on your painting well. You can tell an amateur painter usually by two things, their sense of design and their sense of color. Professionals, or people who have studied, who have practiced their art, are immediately discernible because you can see the difference in their use of color and their use of composition. The principles that we have for spiritual living began with the principle of oneness. It started very early in man's realization of the spiritual aspect of life. The ancient Hebrews said, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one God." Now, this oneness is not an opposite to many. Doesn't mean that this one God is the supreme God, or the most powerful God, or any other description that would bring it into a sense of dualism. It really means that there is only God. Now, we've heard that there is only one God, so we have that as a cultural tradition in our Judeo-Christian culture. There is only one God. Yet, we live our life with the acceptance of God and another power. God and man, God and evil, God and disease. And if we accept any other power other than God, we are not really accepting that principle. We're not putting that principle of oneness into practice. Meditation is the way in which we put into practice this spiritual way of life. And meditation is that activity which takes us out of our human perception and brings us into a realization of the presence of God. In the beginning of the book, I don't know if I would recommend this book if you haven't read it recently, because it really outlines the nature of meditation, the purpose of meditation, and the way of meditation. The purpose is to experience the presence of God. It is to, as Joel said, it is to take the principles of spiritual living out of the mind and into the heart. In other words, we take the principles of oneness and move that principle, I should say one principle, there aren't many principles of oneness, move that idea out of an intellectual acceptance into an experience. Joel has told us in his revelation that God is an experience. God isn't a concept. If we can make a concept of God, we are not experiencing the truth. We are experiencing a concept. If we have an idea about God, if we have a belief about God, we are not experiencing God. People ask me sometimes if I believe in God. I say, no, I don't. Belief is something that is not experiential. A belief can be changed. A belief can be erroneous. Many people believe in God and their belief is erroneous. They believe that God is a power up in heaven that is going to judge mankind and mete out punishment. I certainly don't believe in that God. If you were to present that God to me, I'd say, well, no, I guess I'm an atheist. But I do believe that there is one infinite universal power that is all power, that is omnipotent, and that that power is love, and that in that power there is nothing other than it, other than God. So how do we get from a material perspective, a human perspective, from the mind into the experience? And we do that through meditation. Joel says here, from the moment that we know God through experience, life changes for us, because there is a relaxation of our personal selfhood. A feeling arises of something other than ourselves operating in us, through us, and for us, something greater than ourselves. This has been the experience of all mystics, They have actually known God. They have felt God's presence. And God becomes an active power in their lives. There are not many such people in the world. If there were but a few more who really knew God, perhaps those few might be enough to save the world. According to Scripture, 10 righteous men have saved a city. The mystic's conscious awareness of the presence and power of God is the product of experience. It is not mere conversation about God's availability. It is not only an affirmation or a statement. It is not merely a platitude or a cliche. It is a living fact. So how do we come into that fact that we are living in oneness with God? This comes through meditation. Now, meditation is an ancient technique. People have been meditating for millennia. Meditation is not the end. Meditation brings us into that state of awareness where we can perceive the presence of God. Now, sometimes we are in places or have been perhaps in a cathedral or out somewhere in the forest or at sea, and without meditating, without any precondition or seeking, we feel something. We feel a connectedness. I've experienced that many times. And that feeling that comes where you understand that there is only one is the presence of God. And when that announces itself, when that is in your consciousness, you are living by another set of laws. You are not living as a human being, but you are living as a spiritual being. You are, as Paul said, that I live, yet not I, Christ liveth my life. You are living through that, through a Christ consciousness, which we all have. Now, Joel's terminology is very Christian, but it is not Christian in the sense of orthodoxy or dogma. It is Christian in that he uses Scripture as the foundation, as the demonstration of what mysticism is about. And when you look at Scripture, you have to be very judicious, because there were very few mystics in Scripture. You have probably 10% of Scripture is about the mystical life. The rest of Scripture is about human evolution, human unfoldment, human power, morality. And lots of times in Scripture you have a very strong sense of good and evil, reward and punishment. So in that context, we are not very biblical. But because of the actions of Jesus, his demonstration of the Christ, because of the activities of Paul, of John, because of the writings of Isaiah, and we can go back to the stories of Elisha and Elijah. And the real basis of Western mysticism is Moses, where it was first revealed, at least to the Western consciousness, the nature of God as I. So this experience of the oneness of God that we have in meditation is our liberty. It frees us from the limitations of material concept. But it cannot be viewed through material concept. So there's a paradox there. It frees us. It allows us to function as Jesus wished his followers to function, to be in the world, but yet not be of the world. That means that we participate in our daily life, we participate in our society, in our work, in our family, but yet we do not accept the limitations, the laws, the idea of material cause and effect, because we experience oneness. We experience that there is only one cause, and that cause is God. Now, I just read something very interesting in the paper today. I don't know if any of you follow physics and quantum mechanics, but Einstein's theory of relativity has just been discredited. The fundamental point of Einstein's theory, E equals mc squared, is that light, the speed of light, is constant. Nothing can go faster than the speed of light. Well, a few months ago, Italian scientists at CERN in Geneva sent a neutron down this, I don't know how long it was, how many kilometers, way into Italy. And this neutron arrived at its destination faster than light travels. And they thought maybe their instruments were wrong. They thought they went back and recalculated this experiment. Then they put it very subtly out into the scientific community. Here's what we found, but we think there must be a mistake somewhere. So the scientists started examining to see where there could be a mistake, since all of quantum mechanics, all of our physics is based upon that unyielding fact that nothing can go faster than the speed of light. Yet they just measured something that went faster than the speed of light, which in quantum mechanics means that the idea of cause and effect is turned on its head. The effect happens before the cause. So how can the effect happen before the cause? That just changes our whole idea of the nature of material life. Going material life, I mean from the macrocosm of the universe down to the microcosm of quantum mechanics. So we are at a point right now, I mean this is brand new, that the scientific community doesn't know exactly now how to qualify or codify the nature of life. What we know spiritually is that the nature of life is invisible, that the nature of life is, as Joel terms it, an unseen reality that exists here and now, and it exists within each and every individual. So the individual that discovers this secret of life, discovers this presence of God within them, and then experiences that presence, becomes a law unto themselves. And since there is only one, that self that they are a law unto, which comes out of their own individual experience, but that self is universal. I will take a brief pause because I knew that there was going to be somebody coming late. And to fix my recording device. So the purpose of meditation is to bring us into this state of awareness where we can experience the oneness of God. Now, meditation isn't that experience. Meditation is the preparation. Meditation basically takes us out of our conditioned sense of mind, conditioned mentality, into an unconditioned state of mind where we are receptive to that spiritual nature. Now the principles of God are oneness, nowness. God is ever present. So God is only present in the now moment. God does not function in the future or in the past. God is complete. This universe is complete. There's nothing that can be added or subtracted from creation. Mankind has not discovered a fraction of what is creation is about. We observe creation through conditioned senses. We observe creation through a personal sense of I. What does it have to do with me? How do I fit in this? But creation is, when that I shifts, that identification shifts from a personal sense to the infinite invisible, then we begin to perceive the oneness of all creation, and we can experience our unity with all life. Because there is only one. So that basic principle that we have of oneness is the foundation for mystical living. That there's only one, there's only one power. There cannot be many powers. When we realize this, we find that our own experience shifts out of a seeking and a struggle for something in the future, but a desire to experience that presence in the now. Meditation will bring us to that point of receptivity that allows us to experience that divine one. Because we are not in a state of mind that has concepts, beliefs, or opinions. We are in a receptive state. But this receptive state isn't a dull state. It is extremely alert. It is a state of mind that is been cleansed of its beliefs about this world, its beliefs about self, its beliefs about life. We get into this state by allowing our thoughts to leave our mind. It's not through might, it's not by pushing out thoughts. It's not through an act of will. It's not through affirmations that bring us into this state, but it is by observing, watching, and not judging that which is going on in our mentality. This stillness is the receptive consciousness. And this stillness can be an integral part of every moment of our day. It's not dependent upon sitting down and having a quiet space. It comes through practice. As in any art, without practice we don't become proficient. The practice of meditation, of taking time away from our daily routine to meditate, to let our thoughts go, to let our worries go, our planning, all that concerns this conceptual perception of life. We are left then with this stillness. as we recognize this state of being, as we are consciously aware of this silence, we break down the barriers that prevent us from experiencing it more often. This receptive state of mind is always with us, and we can carry this receptive state of mind into whatever facet of life we are engaged, whether it's family or business, travel. This really is not turned off by any material activity. Our attention moves away from the stillness as we have to engage in this world. But it doesn't mean that we lose our sense of awareness of the divine, because the divine is everywhere. There is no place that we can get away, if we ever would want to get away, from God. God is omnipresent. And that omnipresence is known in the stillness. It's not known by words and thoughts, but it's known in the stillness. And what did the prophet say, or Paul, to know God aright is life eternal? When we begin functioning out of this awareness, this level of consciousness, we find that fear leaves us. We find that we no longer have a personal sense of life, in that we are identifying with our body, with our race, our gender, our age. We find that we identify with this infinite invisible, this I. And this I that we identify with is inseparable from the universe. It is the all in all. I am that I am. So this presence goes before us, and it prepares the way for us. We've prepared the way now in this first few minutes of our weekend. We are preparing the way for the weekend. We are setting the stage, the tone, for exploring the nature of mystical living. And we participate in this by our acknowledging this presence as one. This isn't personal. This isn't coming from an individual. This is universal consciousness, experienced individually. Now this stillness is as much a part of us as life itself. As an artist, this stillness is the foundation from which we express spiritual living. Practicing meditation is like practicing the scales on a piano. Or if you're a visual artist, it's like doing sketches so that you kind of train your eye and get your hand and eye moving so that you can put something down on paper. For the individual expression of life from a mystical standpoint blesses the whole world, where art and music can uplift the soul, the recognition of this spiritual way of life by a mystic, that this life is one, that everyone living is living in this mystical consciousness, even if they don't know it. That recognition breaks down the limitations of material concept. Our world that we live in is defined by our agreement culturally and universally about what is good and what is evil. And that starts forming a style of living that is based on judgment. For to label something good or label something evil is a judgment. Now, it's not just about culture or belief, it's about everything that we see. And this world, the limitations of this world were imposed upon mankind by this kind of judgment. Man would go into the forest and they would judge everything in the forest. This is beneficial, this is good. These trees make great houses, these trees make great furniture. Don't get near that tree, it'll cause you to itch. Don't eat that berry, it'll kill you. Eat these things. So we have this whole world that is developed of what is good and what is evil. And we accept it. And on a certain level, on the material level, it is necessary for human survival. But it is not the truth. It is a relative truth. If it was true, then there would never be any healings of disease, because the disease is judged by this world as having power. And that power has a certain story to it. It has a scenario. It starts with a certain something, a virus or whatever it might be, and then it goes and it goes to its fulfillment of either being defeated, cut out, or the person dies. Now, our whole way of looking at life from a scientific perspective is about battle. We have all, at least in America, everything is a war. We have a war on drugs, we have a war on poverty, we have wars around the world. You would think that Americans are the most violent people on earth. Perhaps they are. But that conditioning is that we must overcome and defeat evil with good. And that kind of thinking, which is it's so ingrained in the human psyche, is erroneous. We will never experience the oneness of life if we are caught up in looking at life as having to overcome evil with good. Because that way of thinking is an admission or an acceptance that there is a power outside of God. When you have only one, and you don't have God and, you don't have any cause for resistance. The mystic lives by the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount, that Jesus talks to thousands. What does his Bible say? 5,000, the multitude, with the loaves and fishes. He fed 5,000. All these people came. And what was he talking about? Spiritual oneness. The freedom. The way of living without bondage. The way of freedom. And the people that were not, were looking at it from the human perspective, were thinking he was talking about being free of Roman tyranny, or being free of suffering, or being free of hunger. So they came, because he knew that there wasn't two, there was only one. So when all of these people were there, and the disciples came and were upset that they had such a crowd, and they said, look, we have only a few fish and some bread. How are we going to satisfy these people? Jesus didn't see 5,000 or 10,000 or however many there were. Jesus knew there was only one. And he said, don't think about this. Don't bring into your consciousness this idea that there are all of these people that have to be fed with this little amount of food and that we are going to be dividing. Because he knew there was only one. He said, you just go out there and spread the food around. When all the food was spread around, the disciples came back and they had 12 bushels left over. And they were amazed because they didn't think that their limited amount of material supply were going to feed this great number of people. What they didn't know was that there is only one. And when you have one, you have the infinity of God. So that demonstration satisfied the masses. That's all they came for. They came for this physical food, this physical sustenance, and this encouragement that they do not have to be slaves to tyranny. And it wasn't the tyranny of Rome that Jesus was talking about. It was the tyranny of material belief. So he left the multitude and took the 12, very small group of people. And it was to them that he gave them the Sermon on the Mount. And what did that say? It said, you resist not evil. It said, if someone wants your coat, you give them your cloak also. It says, you love your enemies. It gives you the path of non-resistance. You do not resist evil. Why? If you resist evil, you're creating another power. You're creating yourself and another power that has to be overcome. Now this is mystical living. This is not for the masses. But what mystical living does is that an individual who is cognizant of this, experiences oneness, has that stillness in their consciousness, wherever they are, whatever they're doing, then they are living in a state of oneness. So when something, a power, appears in their life to say that there is another power outside of God, that power cannot exist in that consciousness of God. The basic healing principle of the infinite way is where God is realized, in the realized presence of God, there is no other power. So you see how that takes us out of all of the mental and metaphysical battling of negativity in this world. As soon as we mentally try and battle something or get rid of something, we are giving it power. But as we experience this stillness in meditation, and we have practiced that, so we are living this spiritual art in the world. When anything comes that says you that this is power, it comes against that consciousness, and immediately there comes into our awareness oneness. Might not come as words, it might come as words. It might come as just a realization, a knowing that that has no power. Just as you would see 2 + 2 = 5 on a blackboard, you'd say that's a mistake. Wouldn't upset you. Wouldn't mean anything to you. If you were a teacher and a student put it up there, you would correct it. But if you were going about your daily life, you would just look at it, it's insignificant, it's meaningless. So you wouldn't contend with it, and you would move on. You would correct it, you'd say that's not true in your mind when you saw it. Same thing when other things come into us. A sense of power, a disease, lack, poverty, conflict. And it comes into our awareness, and rather than thinking, how are we going to solve this problem, that stillness that we developed brings within us the means. It's creative, comes out of consciousness. How do I deal with this? I'm going to deal with this spiritually. How do I deal with it? And suddenly you have an idea, you have the way to deal with it that is based on spiritual principles, not based on human belief. So this is the basis of meditation. This is the purpose of meditation. And it is an art because it has to be practiced. In the practice, in the beginning, it is sitting down and it is putting aside the time to be still for no other purpose than to be still. What purpose does an artist have in practicing the scales? It's just to loosen up their fingers, or it's just to get everything flowing. An artist sketches for the same reason. We meditate for that same reason. It's to set our day so that we can be expressing the Spirit of God. We can be expressing the truth, instruments of the truth. And in that, we are praying without ceasing. We are loving our neighbor as ourself. We are fulfilling the two great commandments. The only commandments in mysticism, the only commandments really in Christianity, are love God with all your heart and mind and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. Those are the only commandments. If religion says, oh no, you have to do this to be spiritual, or you have to do that. No, there's only two commandments. Everything else is coming out of concept, out of belief. And concept and belief have no power. The only power they have is the power that is given to them by an individual. Well, I think it's time for a break, and we will get into this more in just a few minutes, just a stretch, and then we'll resume. Thank you.